All right, appreciate you guys being a part of the Sliwa Show. I want to welcome in George Castillo, LA Times, from the LA Times. He's here to break down some of the rules, protocols this season. George, thank you for doing this, bud. Appreciate you taking the time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So let's start off with this. I got a chance. Sounds like Andrew Friedman was part of a conference call today. Do you mind just giving us a little bit of a breakdown of how some of that conversation went and anything that, you know, surprised you from the chat with Andrew Friedman?
Yeah, I mean, nothing too surprising. But, you know, the big news was that there are members of the organization. He implied that, you know, at least one player who's tested positive for the coronavirus. So that's obviously big news. He wouldn't go into who or how many or exactly how many players or other members of the organization, but he did say that it could have an impact. He's not sure quite yet. It could have an impact on whether the people could report to camp the spring training next week. So that was the big news from the conference call. Obviously, some other things there, and, you know, talking about, you know, how to proceed with this going on. How exactly are they going to police the players and sort of avoid allowing this disease to sort of spread, this virus to spread during the season? And just talking a little bit about the rules, the DH, the idea of getting these guys ready in 3 weeks to play a 60-game season, different things like that. But obviously the big news was that there are some players that, at least one player, probably a few that have tested positive for COVID-19.
George, just to kind of stay with the structure of, and I know we'll get into all the details. You got a great article that details all that out. So for those who haven't got the opportunity to read it, it's in the LA Times, George Castillo. But before I get into that, just how do you feel about the structure of this 60-game season, how it benefits the Dodgers, how it hurts the Dodgers? Just looking at, everybody knows Dodgers are, you know, obviously a favorite to win it all this year or at least get to the World Series. But how does the structure, do you think, play into the Dodgers' strengths and some of the weaknesses that comes from a 60-game schedule?
Right. I mean, I think the Dodgers, regardless, are still the favorites to win the division and to go to the World Series. Now, I think their margin for error, obviously, is a lot smaller. You know, this team is designed to play a 162-game season, followed by the playoffs. You know, they've won 7 straight division titles. They got Mookie Betts in February to sort of get over the hump in the playoffs. They had that elite talent. This team was sort of built for the long haul. What happens with a 60-game season is someone can get kind of hot for 2 months and all of a sudden they're in the playoffs. You know, some team that you did not expect to be there. So if the Dodgers get off to a rough start like they did a couple of years ago, you can't just turn it around, you know, wait till June to turn it around. You need to do that immediately. So there's obviously a lot less room for error, but still the team's super talented. They're deep. Starting rotation-wise, that lineup is super deep. They have, you know, they're going to cycle through the DH, you know, different guys there. It's just a really good team. Obviously, now people are super excited to see Mookie Betts at the top of the batting order. You added David Price, lost Hyunjin Ryu, but you added David Price, you know, Kershaw, Buehler, and Julio Urias in the rotation, and Alex Wood. It's a super deep team. It's just less margin for error. It's basically what it boils down to. There's more of a chance of another team sort of stealing division title, getting into the playoffs. So it's not ideal for the Dodgers, but they're still the favorites.
Yeah, I think that's the key there is, okay, it's not ideal, but there's still, you know, there aren't many holes, let's put it that way. And I think they came out today, strength of schedule, they have the fourth easiest, I'll put that in quotes, because, you know, you never know what happens. How many times do you think a team's not going to do well? And I'm sure in this short season, there's going to be teams that come out of nowhere, teams that you thought are going to do well, but struggled and never were able to recover. It's certainly a position that I wish, or that I think most teams wish they were as good as the Dodgers, and we'll see what happens from there. But, all right, in your article, if you can kind of break this down, and you highlight a lot of this stuff, but I want you to go into the details. So what happens if a player or personnel tests positive for the coronavirus? What happens under these Major League Baseball rules and these protocols?
Yeah, so basically a player will be tested, people will be tested, players will be tested every other day during the season. Now, if a player tests positive, it's basically going to be you are not allowed to travel. You're not allowed to go to any facilities, any stadiums or anything like that. or come or have contact with other people. Once you test positive, you basically have to go in self-quarantine. Once you test positive, you're basically going to this COVID-19 basically injured list. There's no sort of minimum time or maximum time you can be on that list. Players will still get paid. They'll still get their service time. It's basically just an injured list for an unspecified amount of time. And from there, in order for the player to come back, they need to test negative twice in a row, have no fever for at least 72 hours, so 3 days, perhaps even pass a cardiac exam, and then be deemed by doctors in Major League Baseball to present no risk to others. Now, you know, it's sort of a lot, right? You know, if a key player gets the virus, mm-hmm. you know, with 10, 15 games to go, I mean, who's to know if that player will be back until the playoffs? You know, it can be really tough. It's going to be super interesting to see how this affects, you know, how the games are played and the standings, and because we're sort of thinking sort of in a vacuum. The season's mm-hmm. so short that, you know, if a guy misses 15, 20 games, it's a third of the season. It can have a huge impact, and that's why self-policing, you know, these players, these teams have to make sure that they don't get the virus. I mean, first of all, not to get sick and to get others sick, but also just to stay on the field and win games. Mm-hmm. So I think the Dodgers, obviously they know that. There's a lot at stake here. This is a team that wants to win the World Series. They are motivated. So I think this is a team that will be maybe even more motivated to make sure that they're good and don't get sick, more than even other teams, because they have World Series aspirations.
George Castillo with the LA Times joining the Sliwa Show. You know, George, it's a good point, and I think part of this, you can only control so much, and I reference the NBA all day long. I do the pre- and post-game show for the Lakers, so for me, I'm always looking at the Lakers and saying, okay, well, you know, this means so much to the Lakers. Here they got a shot to win an NBA championship. The reality is, it sounds like you could be as careful as you possibly can, but all it takes is, you know, it could be an opposing team. It could be somebody that has no idea they have it, right? Like, nobody has negative intentions and are walking around saying, okay, let me spread this thing. You know, obviously that's not the case. But I think the Dodgers are going to be in a, you know, similar position as the Lakers. You're one of the favorites. You got a chance to win it all. Every game is so important. Every game is so critical. Every player is so critical. It's interesting to kind of see all the dynamics that will, and nobody has the answers. So, you know, when the season starts, we're going to learn new stuff. A month into the season, it will be different. And if we get all the way to where we could crown a World Series champion, it seems like every single day we'll get new information and we'll just kind of figure it out as we go, because there's really no other way to do it.
No, that's for sure. And just the one thing between the NBA and Major League Baseball is different in terms of their seasons during this pandemic is that the NBA will have a hub. You know, there won't be that much travel going on. These teams, obviously these players can kind of like do whatever they want in Disney and kind of go in and out and eat out and do whatever they want. But they're not going to be doing any air travel. They won't be going from city to city. This is where baseball is taking a chance, man. Like, it's, you know.
That's the scary part. Travel,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the scary. No, it is. And they're going to places, Arizona. They'll be going to Houston.
Texas, right? The whole state of Texas,
yeah,
yep.
Places that have cases are going up. You know, hospitalizations are going up. You know, Major League Baseball is taking a chance, whereas the NBA, MLS, I believe in hockey, they're doing hubs. You know, they're kind of trying to mitigate the chances of, you know, you getting it just by traveling or, you know, just being in different areas. So baseball is taking a chance, and, you know, that's why it's wait and see. You know, we're expecting baseball, you know, next week, it'll be first day of spring training, July 23rd, 24th, opening day. But, you know, to get there, there's still a lot to be, you know, not a lot to be done, but it's a lot of wait and see to see if we will get there, see if they start the season, not to start it, but finish it. This is supposed to go through October. It's a long ways to go, man. And, you know, over the last 3 months, we've seen a ton of stuff happen with this virus. You know, people are talking about a second wave, and there's a lot going on. And, you know, obviously, hopefully, we see a season, we see it through. A lot of people want to see it happen, and players want to play. Hopefully it happens, but it's just a lot of chances being taken.
So, George, why is this? Let me follow up on this. So I feel like the Arizona bubble was talked about for a while, and then it seemed like a lot of the players weren't feeling it. And listen, here's another difference between the NBA and Major League Baseball. The NBA, they're also towards the end of the regular season, right? Only 8 games left, and then they could play out the playoffs. So the NBA, mm-hmm. hopefully it's a few months and they're done. Major League Baseball, a little bit different. You know, you're obviously cramming all these games in. How come the bubble never got more serious conversation? Because every time now we talk about baseball, like you just mentioned, everybody's saying they're really taking a risk. Well, why didn't they minimize some of that risk? Why wasn't that more of that conversation taken more seriously?
Well, first of all, I just think at the beginning of this conversation 3 months ago, we just didn't know when baseball was going to be played again. I mean, these guys thought they could maybe play in like the beginning of June or, you know, end of May. So the idea of being in a hub, you know, being sort of not around your family from May to October or June to October was a lot. Now we're kind of figuring out later in the game that it's actually just the end of July through October, which I think if you told some players that at the beginning, I think they would have been more susceptible to being like, oh, you know, okay, that's fine. But then again, you know, like as you mentioned, the NBA had 8 games to finish, you know. It's not a whole lot. Most of the teams aren't going to be in that hub for very long, you know. The Washington Wizards of the world, you know, the Phoenix Suns of the world will be there for a couple of weeks and then they're bouncing.
Sure.
It's not going to be – it's not, you know,
Six teams will be out quick.
Whereas in baseball, it's all 30 teams are going to be in there for a long time. So I think that's a big difference. You know, the NBA players will be there for a bit, but only if you're a really good team, it's going to go deep into the playoffs. Now, the Miami Marlins are going to be there for 60 games. You know, they're going to be in this for 60 games, the Baltimore Orioles, all these teams. So there are a lot more players to sort of to please in a way. And, you know, like when players like Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw, different guys are soft-spoken and saying, hey, I don't want to be quarantined from my family for 3, 4, 5 months, Major League Baseball is going to listen because those are the superstars and the players that people want to watch. And that's just frankly how it goes.
Okay, so what about if a player doesn't feel safe? Let's say a player doesn't want to be a part of this. What happens in that scenario?
Yeah, so basically if they're deemed high risk by doctors, they can opt not to play and they'll get their money in this service time. But if they're not deemed high risk and they opt not to play, they can just not play, but they won't get paid. And that's just basically how it goes. So, you know, it's tough because if you have a family member that's high risk, that's not really taken into account by the league. It's basically only if the player is high risk. And so it's tough. You know, some guys have some tough decisions probably to make, you know, whether to play themselves if they're high risk or if they have family members who they want to see during the time period that are high risk. You know, Mike Trout, you know, people have talked about this. Mike Trout's wife is due to have a baby. What do you do in that situation?
Sure.
Do you leave and come back? Do you have to get quarantined for 14 days when you come back? How much time? So that means you might miss 3 weeks, you know? And 3 weeks in a 60-game season is quite a bit. So there are a lot of questions, a lot of uncertainties going. They're sort of awaiting us over the next few months if this happens, if they can carry it through. And it's going to be super interesting to see.
You know, George, just playing off of that, you said, let's say Mike Trout misses 3 weeks. I don't blame the guy. It's his, you know, his first kid, right? 3 weeks, you know, 21 days, you're talking about potentially 21 games. So that's a third of the season. So just kind of, you know, kind of paints the picture of how quick the season is going to go by. And especially one of, you know, obviously the main players, the best player arguably in baseball. So, okay. So can you give me an idea on some of these safety protocols? So what are some of the protocols that are in there that, you know, a lot of, the league is going to have to obviously take as part of Major League Baseball protocols?
Yeah, man, there's a lot.
Just a couple of the main ones that you would say are, I guess you could say interesting to point out to listeners.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously no high fives, no fist bumps, no hugs. You know, if a team wins the World Series, is there going to be no dog pile? It's going to be kind of weird, you know, right? No fighting allowed, you know, no arguing.
I love that one. I love that one. No fighting. Like, no arguing, it is kind of interesting, George. Think about that. Like, you know, we talk about the Astros and the Dodgers, and Kenley Jansen was on the station yesterday with George Sedano, and he said, you know, he wouldn't throw at an Astros player, but just the heat of the battle, the competition, everything else. If there's no fighting in baseball, it just makes – and it's all good. I'm not a fan of that anyways. But just kind of trying to think of that when you have these teams that both benches, you know, they clear and the bullpen's clear and all that. That's almost every play in football. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's literally every play in football. But continue to go on this.
Yeah, man. There's a lot of stuff that, like, just subtleties that baseball players just do instinctively, you know, the no fist bumps and high fives, no arguing with umps in close proximity. Pitchers can like carry a wet rag in their back pocket if they want to use moisture for the baseball because they can't lick their own fingers. They can also have their own rosin bag. Players have to have their own pine tar,
their own rags,
their own bat donuts. You know, between innings, if you're on base, your boy can't get you your glove and your sunglasses and your hat. And from the dugout, you got to go running and get it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
After outs, after strikeouts, for example, the catcher can't throw around the diamond. That's strongly discouraged. Lockers must be 6 feet away. And if they're not, you have to find a sort of an auxiliary locker, make an auxiliary locker room. Mascots are allowed in the stadium, but not on the field. Just a bunch of stuff. It's a lot of things that I think people aren't really going to grasp until they watch a game. You're like, wow, this is strange. Beyond the fact that there aren't going to be fans, at least to start in most of these parks. I mean, maybe down the line, I'm seeing some stuff here, maybe Chicago, Houston, they're trying to get fans, different cities. But to start, there won't be any fans either. So you add that on top of everything. It's just going to be a strange, sort of surreal situation. These games are just going to be kind of weird to watch.
All right, George, a couple more quick questions. George Castillo of the LA Times joining the Sliwa Show. So Caesars Sportsbook has the Dodgers winning 37 games this year, right? So 37 games. Yankees second at 36.5. So that just kind of gives you a lay of the land of where everybody thinks the Dodgers are. In the NL West, just specifically the NL West, what team do you think can give the Dodgers some kind of trouble? And I guess maybe the best way to put it is what team's coming in second place. But in the NL West, what team between the Giants, the Padres, the Rockies, and the D-backs you think might be a team that's a formidable opponent?
Just given how short the season is and how a team can just start off hot and just be in it, the one team I would say who's not in it from the jump is the Giants. That team I really don't think is a factor. The other three teams I could see, if they get hot, the Padres, Manny Machado, a lot of young talent, Fernando Tatis Jr., they have some good talent there. The Rockies, just a couple of years ago, went to the 100th game, 163 against the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium.
That's right.
It was a wreck for them. They got Arenado. They got a lot of talent there. And then I think the team that's, the toughest will be the Diamondbacks. In last year, I believe they finished in second place in the division. It's a good, solid team. And all you need to do, man, is start off hot. If you start off 13-3, I mean, that's 16 games. Let's do the quick math here. That's like a fourth of the season right there.
Sure. That can ride you through.
All that matters.
All right, final question, George. And, again, appreciate you joining the show. What are you expecting from Mookie Betts this season? Just a 60-game season. Obviously, this will be the first time he gets a true opportunity to play for the Dodgers. Everybody knows he'll be a free agent after the season is over. What are some of your expectations walking into this year with Mookie?
I expect him to be an all-star caliber player. He's a really great player. One of the top, this child's the best player in the league, and Mookie can make an argument he's the second best player in the league when he's right and going well. I mean, 2 years ago, he was MVP in the American League. Last year was, quote-unquote, a down year, and he still was an all-star caliber MVP, finished eighth in the American League MVP voting. He's a great player. It's a free agent year. As you said, it's a walk year, extra motivated. The guy's going to come in. I mean, he's going to come in looking to tear the cover off the baseball. So I think he's a great defender, great base runner. He's just an all-around talent. That's why the Dodgers went out and got him. I expect him to just be really good. Obviously, same thing with teams. If you start off a little cold or a little hot, it's going to make a big difference because the season's so short. But I think from the jump, this guy's going to be a great talent. I think Dodgers fans are going to be it's going to be great to sort of see him on an everyday basis. He's just one of those premier talents. And to go with Cody Bellinger, NL MVP from last year, that outfield is probably the best in baseball.
George, thank you for doing this, buddy. I appreciate it. Great insight. Great article right now in the LA Times. Breaks down all the rules, the protocols this season for not just the Dodgers, but for Major League Baseball. Thank you for doing this, George.
Hey, no problem, man. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, buddy. All right, that's George Castillo right there. All right, we got halftime coming up next, guys. Halftime coming up next. Jesse and Curtis will chime in as well. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show, 710 ESPN. All right, so did you guys want a Parks and Rec update that you guys are looking for?
Yes. Please, okay. Inform us where you're at. I want to see if I've left you already.
I'm trying to think where I'm at real quick. Okay. What's Rob Lowe's character's name?
Chris Traeger.
Okay. he just basically takes what's her name? I gotta pop up all Ann the Perkins. Character names. He takes Ann Perkins to court, basically, because she is dating let me get the Parks and Rec characters. I should have been better prepared for this. My bad. Okay, so so he takes Leslie Knope to court, right? So basically, because she's dating Ben Wyatt.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
So that's pretty much where I am. So that's I want to say that's kind of the latest. So wherever that is in the season, that's exactly where I'm at. It's Chris Traeger or whatever his name is, right?
So have you finally learned about Lil Sebastian?
Wait, is Lil Sebastian the
R.I.P. Lil Sebastian?
Oh yeah, definitely. I know Lil Sebastian.
Wait, Lil Sebastian. We've been waiting for that moment.
I don't think. Wait. Oh no, you're that episode. I don't know if it's that episode or the one after. But it's
Lil Sebastian. Lil Sebastian is
the mini horse.
The mini horse, right? Yep. Yeah, and that's at the
Stone
carnival.
Call it a pony.
At the carnival,
yes.
Where what's his name loses him?
The Harvest Festival.
Where Tom Haverford loses him and blames it on Jerry.
Yes, and then they all get stuck in the Ferris wheel, and Ron's in the middle, where April and Andy are fighting, and then Tom and Jerry are fighting, and then Ron calls them out.
But Ron, the entire time, is incredibly passionate
Sebastian.
Lil Sebastian. Lil Sebastian.
The horse that played Lil Sebastian passed away a few months ago, so RIP Lil Sebastian.
Thousand candles in the wind.
So that's exactly where I'm at. That's exactly where I'm at on the show. So right in that little ballpark. So I think I'm probably at the end of season 4 is where I think I'm at. So now Ben and Leslie are dating each other, and they don't care. And Ben was actually unemployed for a while, and now Ben is becoming the campaign manager for Leslie. That's where I'm at right now.
How many
seasons are they?
7, I believe. Let me double check that, but I believe there are 7. It's 7 or 8. It's not double digits for sure. Mm-hmm. Parks and Rec.
Andy Dwyer is more just an idiot than any other time, and he's amazing. So 7 seasons. He's been great.
Oh, yeah. Andy Dwyer is great. Chris Pratt as Andy Dwyer is great. April Ludgate and Andy Dwyer as a couple are amazing because they're two like polar opposite kind of people. Yep. So it's like that perfect yin and yang, that mesh. And then Ron Swanson is just
go back to Swanson. Swanson's the best character in Parks and Rec. He's not Michael Scott. Michael Scott is for me probably the greatest character ever, but Ron Swanson is on a very short list of unbelievable characters. Okay, actually I gotta get something started here. I thought about both of you guys yesterday, all right? And I don't need you guys because I know you guys can easily spend an hour and a half on this topic alone. But did you guys see Damian Lillard's tweet yesterday?
Oh, yes, I know what you're talking about.
No, I don't think I did.
Curtis, you did not see it. Okay. So yesterday, Tone Rotten, WROTEN. I don't know who he is. I'll look at who he is, but maybe he's a reporter or something along those lines. He put out a tweet on his Mount Rushmore of wrestlers. Damian Lillard responded with his Mount Rushmore of wrestlers. So, Curtis, I'm going to ask you this. Don't look it up. Don't look up anything. All right. Who do you think is on Damian Lillard's Mount Rushmore of wrestlers?
I'll go for the safe casual choices. Ric Flair.
On there.
The Rock.
The Rock is on there as well. Ding. Jess, I don't know what that is. Keep going, Curtis.
The one I'm not sure about, because he hasn't been too lucky in the news lately, Hulk Hogan.
Okay, so I'm going to hold off on that one.
Yeah,
because,
that one's kind of a
Here's what happened. He initially put Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart on there as his fourth, and then came back. It sounded like he took them off and replaced them with somebody else. So you still got two more to guess.
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Stone Cold's on there. So you basically got 3 of the 4. He had Hulk Hogan and Bret Hart, and then he took them off and he put somebody else on there as his Mount Rushmore.
How about The Undertaker?
The Undertaker.
He just retired, supposedly, a couple days ago.
I never
had to text Jesse about that.
Okay, so I guess here's the question I got. Jess, you could tell me, how much different is his list than your list?
I mean,
who's not on there on that list, or is it the same?
No, it would be mostly the same, because I'm looking at the way he's probably talking about the WWF Mount Rushmore. Because if you're talking about WWF Mount Rushmore, the only different thing that I would probably, I don't know, because Ric Flair, the only difference I would take is I would definitely probably take out.
Gotta have Hulk in there. You gotta have Hulk in there. I mean, the fact that Undertaker, I was like shocked.
Hulk's had some issues in the news recently, so I think that's more of a personality thing. People don't like it. The Hulkster.
That's how it is for me too. Because if it wasn't for the dumb stuff he's done in the past, he'd be up there. But I would take him out, and I would honestly put John Cena in there. John Cena has to be in the conversation, whether regardless you like him or not. He is a model of what a WWE wrestler is.
Okay.
Superstar is supposed to be.
So just going just off that. So you got Stone Cold, you got The Rock, you got John Cena, and who's your fourth?
Woo!
Ric Flair. Okay. Yeah. All right. So there's your four. Curtis, where are we at here? What would be, who stays, who's off on that list?
Yeah, my intuition was kind of right. It seems more like the hardcores have a slightly different Mount Rushmore. Like, mine's slightly different too. It's pretty close to Jesse's. But there's like a casual scene, and it's like, you pick the ones that you remember the most, and they're the most hyped. So that makes a lot of sense. But for me, I mean, The Rock and Stone Cold, just because, Jesse and I grew up with them. That was our, those were our battles.
I don't
battles.
Become a wrestling
even
fan.
I watched. Even I was watching wrestling when those, those two had a run where I think they had everybody captivated. You know what I mean? And by the way, when I was younger, it was, Hulk Hogan, and it was Ultimate Warrior, and it was Randy Man or Macho Man, Randy Savage. Like, there is definitely, I was never a big Ric Flair guy, but I feel like as I got older, Ric Flair has become bigger. Like, he's just like his own character.
He's the
one
that never goes away either in that business. He, like, Ric Flair will show up at least, every other year, even to this day. You know, it's like he will never go away. He will live on forever.
He is going to be forever. He's going to outlive all of us, because he just has whatever that's fueling his body is keeping him going. And it's keeping him going at the same rate he probably was, even 5 years ago. And he's old. He's old. So it amazes me. Him, Ric Flair is just him, the person is, it's crazy and it's insane. But you definitely have to recognize that, he was the bona fide heel on, the golden era of wrestling. And he did it without having a really big, big company like WWE, WWF back then to promote him. To say that he's that big and he, didn't really have that, it says a lot, which is why he's also on a lot of people's, Mount Rushmore.
So, Curtis, did you give your four?
Yeah, the only difference from Jesse's list, because I got to put Rick on there too. Mm-hmm. This is more of a, not many people would have this take. Jesse might agree with me. So, Chris Jericho, who left the company to headline the new company, AEW. People don't remember Chris Jericho when he debuted back in the day. Was against The Rock, and beat him. And Jericho is the guy they've gave him every belt. He's held multiple
the
at
champion.
Once. And then
the first ever
over.
Undisputed champion.
Yeah, and he's got his band Fozzy. His band's pretty iconic. And just the fact that he carried a second company that's now, safe to say, coming up and in the ranks there. He doesn't get – that's more of a all-encompassing for the business kind of choice for me, but – for me, he's actually my five.
I can't go wrong with that.
And when I saw that yesterday, I saw Dame on there. I'm like, all right, well, let me throw this at the guys. Curtis, why don't you go, bud?
Hold on. Before Curtis goes, I got two more things just leading off of that. Because Chris Jericho, I just want to mention, if you want to know, why Chris Jericho is also the good, I remember watching Chris Jericho during when Austin and The Rock was there. And I hated Chris Jericho with a passion.
You'd love
and
to
now
hear.
I absolutely love him. The wrestlers that can toe the line between actually have that emotion of not liking them but can go back and say, like, you know what? I love this guy. That shows you that you're a good wrestler. And two, talking on Stone Cold Steve Austin just a couple of days ago, it was his 24th birth anniversary of Stone Cold Steve Austin, of basically becoming like the birth of Austin 316 at the,
like, his premiere. Oh, okay. So not his premiere or anything like that.
Yeah, he won the King of the Ring in 1996, beating Jake the Snake Roberts. And after,
love Jake the Snake.
Yeah.
Him and Razor Ramon. Those are my two guys. Those are
all, yeah.
I just have them. I don't even have a Mount Rushmore. I just have those two twice. Those are my four right there.
No, you have Razor Ramon, Scott Hall, and then Jake the Snake Roberts, and then Jake Roberts. There it is.
That's it.
Or his snake. His snake is the fourth one.
That's it. All right, Curtis, what do you got?
So, since I've been gone, I had a lot of time to...
Perfect. Jesse, why don't you go? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
All right, fine. No, since I have had a lot of time off, I had a lot of free time to watch stuff. I always tell you guys how I'm, like, really behind on the movie scene, where I have so many things I haven't seen that I've wanted to see. Mm-hmm. I invested in a high-quality streaming device in which I can access anything I want. No charge to me.
The Greg Bergman way, as Greg, we like to call it, right?
School of TV watching.
Interesting. I can only think of this investment that you put
it's
towards
actually
it. Please,
not,
let me
not
hear more.
That hard is the sad part. But I watched a lot of movies. And did you ever see Drive, Alan?
Who's in it? No.
Ryan Gosling. And Bryan Cranston, right?
Yep, Bryan Cranston's in there too. So it was 2008. Mm-hmm. Right, this is one of Ryan Gosling's
early
movies. He's he's a Hollywood stunt driver that gets caught up in a heist, and that's the description. So I'm like, all right, I'm in, because I've heard people reference this movie before, but never actually watched it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't go in expecting very much, because it was rated like a 2 out of 10. It was rated terribly, and by the end of that movie, I loved it. It ended very gritty, like Pulp Fiction. You were not expecting it, but it was a really good movie, even though it got trashed. So I want to ask you guys if you have a movie that's, you know,
well, here's a quick question. Like, should I actually go out of my way to go see it, or you're like, no, it's not something that you have to go see?
No, this is just like, what is something you really enjoyed that no one else likes that trashes, when they say that was a terrible movie, but you really loved it? Because, like, this was great, even though the rating was terrible, I had a good time watching it. It was very good. Drive.
Jess, you got a movie that comes up that people don't like that you like?
So,
I'm trying to think of that.
I have a couple, but I don't know how much, you know, other people didn't really like it. So one that comes to mind is Wild Wild West with Will Smith and Kevin Kline. And it's basically a Wild Wild West movie, but like, it came out in like the late 90s, early 2000s. I remember watching it again a couple months ago, and I watched it when I was a kid the first time. I can see why a kid I would enjoy it. But watching it again now, I'm just like, it's like that how would I describe it? It's kind of fun. If you watch it, like, if you've never seen it, you'd enjoy it. But then, you know, it's not, it doesn't have good replay value.
It doesn't age very well.
That too. It definitely doesn't age well.
You know what movie that we might have even talked about it? I never understood why it didn't get as much love. Is it just me, or did the other guys never get as much love as it should have?
No, it really didn't.
It didn't?
No.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Jess, you know what movie I'm talking about, right? The other guys? Or
I'm
no?
a peacock, Captain. You gotta let me fly.
Okay, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I never felt like it got the amount. I thought it was one of Will Ferrell's funniest movies that I've ever seen. And that's,
it's one of his low-key favorites. And that cast is actually really good. If you go back,
the cast
and
is great.
At who was in that movie?
Wasn't Samuel like, Jackson and The Rock? They had, they had a scene at the beginning. Yep,
dancing in Heisman or something like that. And they
Eva Mendes.
Eva Mendes is Will Ferrell's wife, who he treats like crap.
Mark Wahlberg's like, what's going on here? The whole time he's trying to understand how they're together,
and he's trying to get with her secretly.
Listen. I mean, look, Will Ferrell, there's no Anchorman, Step Brothers, Talladega Nights. I mean, all his movies are amazing. But I always thought that one's never really talked about. Okay, here's another one that was really
good. Michael Keaton was in that movie.
That's right. Michael Keaton was
Come
in that
on,
movie.
Michael Keaton.
Do you remember The Campaign?
I never watched it. I never came on to watch it. I never wanted to.
Okay, fellas, listen to me. Watch The Campaign. Go see The Campaign. All right? I'm like, you know how we just said about recommending movies, and sometimes we recommend, like, okay, do you really want to recommend a 2-hour movie for somebody? You're hoping that if somebody recommends it, it's, you know, definitely worth their time. I'm telling you guys, go watch The Campaign.
Is this the one with O'Shea in it?
No, I don't think so.
Ferrell. The Campaign, Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, okay. Yep. Well, O'Shea's in some sort of one of those kind of movies,
too. With Will Ferrell?
No, it was someone else. It's another
Dylan McDermott's in it. Just go I'll see it. Like, I'm telling you guys, you will not be disappointed in that movie.
I got a couple other movies too. I kind of, you know, thinking of it, wrote down a couple other ones. I don't know if you saw this movie, Alan Curtis probably did, but Batman Forever, which is the lone Batman movie that was sandwiched between George Clooney's terrible performance as Batman and Tim Burton and Michael Keaton's excellent Batman. It's the one that had Val Kilmer as Batman.
And Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey as the Riddler. Mm-hmm. Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face. Now, it definitely blurred the line of, like, you know, good and, like, really campy kid movie. But I think if you kind of take that out of it, it's not bad. I don't think it's that bad as...
No, I thought it was good. And Robin. I thought it was good. And listen, Jim Carrey is freaking Jim Carrey. You know, he's always going to be great. Val Kilmer, I know he won't be considered the greatest to play that role, but I liked it. I didn't mind.
Yeah,
I didn't mind that at all.
I didn't think there was anything bad to it. What about you, Curtis?
Yeah, I liked it. So another movie I kind of thought of, though. Did you ever see A Knight's Tale?
A Knight's Tale. Is that the one with Heath Ledger? Yes, I have seen that.
It's very rememberable because it's
no, I have not.
It's cheesy, but the soundtrack has classic rock tunes mixed into this medieval story, so it's kind of unsettling, but, like, in a good way.
I don't remember much about that movie.
Yeah, they use, like, We Will Rock You in, like, a scene where they're jousting. It's just a very strange kind of mix of things, but it worked. I actually really enjoyed that movie, but it's more like when you mix those kind of... When it's something that is not, like, average, that kind of catches your eye. I think those movies are always kind of entertaining in their own right.
Jess, do you got a go with yours? Because I know we're. I want to get one in as well. But what do you have over there?
All right. So during crosstalk, you guys are talking about, you know, what are players going to do while in the bubble, right? Because they're going to be quarantined, basically. Or not want to say quarantined, but they're going to be in the bubble for a long time. They're going to have to find different things to do. So I was thinking, you know what? If I was in the bubble, if I was in the NBA, what five things would I for sure take with me into the bubble, inside the bubble?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, mm-hmm. right now, just looking around my room, for sure I would take my Switch is one.
Okay.
My Kindle. Mm-hmm. And this, and Jimmy, just, it's not, this isn't like, you know, of course we're taking all utilities and I know, not utilities.
Sure, sure.
Yep. Like the toothbrush,
essentials,
essentials. Yeah, this is like stuff to keep you entertained, right? So this, my Switch would be one of them with all my games. Another one would be my Kindle. Definitely my laptop. I would take my own Keurig because I'm very picky about my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And along with that, I would buy a box of my favorite creamer from Aldi and make sure I do not run out of that.
Okay, so not just entertainment, also things that you're into. Okay. Okay.
Definitely, yeah.
Curtis, what are you bringing?
It's very similar. I think I'd bring, you know, phone, a laptop. I bring my...
By the way, phone, laptop, just right off the bat.
You have and to, also right?
bring, and you bring wireless headphones. Like, there's literally nothing that you're good. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I think those three are so essential, but then they give you everything.
All universal.
But,
they're very versatile, mm-hmm. too. They mm-hmm. use that with everything. And then I thought a monitor. So that works with the computer, and I'm going to bring, you know, obviously my PlayStation or something like that.
Trying to think. Here's the only tough part. Like, if typically you're in that kind of setting, you're with your team, you want to be able to play cards, you want to be able to, you know, play whatever type of games. You would play chess, you want to play Monopoly, like whatever games that you want to play. But I don't know what the rules are with these guys because of social distancing. I know nobody can come into their hotels.
I don't know if I'd want to play Monopoly against teammates like a night before a big game because Monopoly is known to break friendships apart. That's a tough one for me.
Monopoly is the best.
If you take
it is the best.
You can play 2K in different rooms. So that's a no-brainer, I think. There's going to be a lot of guys playing games together.
That's right. Yeah, they will.
We'll probably get a lot of Twitch streams during the playoffs. I wonder if that'll
honestly,
be a rule.
That's what I'm excited about because I know, you know, in today's age, you know, the NBA is a pretty young league. There's a lot of people who play video games, who play 2K. There's a lot of people who are going to, you know, stream just because it's like their way of interacting with people outside the bubble, you know? So that's going to want to be the low-key things I'm looking forward to see what these players basically do for their own entertainment. Because, you know, some of them are going to
I
got something with, like...
I love the part of going to play golf. I love the part where they could literally go out. There's, like, trails for them to go on. Like, I'm sure there's going to be... I don't know about you guys, but if I'm in one location for 3 months, like just the fact of being cooped up like that, I can't handle that. I got to be out. I got to be breathing the fresh air and all that stuff. I know what you're saying. You're about to say, well, we've been quarantined for 3 months, but trust me, I spent a lot of time outside of my place. Like every morning I go for a walk, you know, however long that goes for, but bro, I got to be outside. But
Man, I don't know how long you want to be walking out in that Orlando heat. In the middle of the summer?
Yeah, it's true, too. But they're going to have – I mean, listen, they're going to have everything.
Oh, yeah, they're going to be well accommodated.
The hope is that they're going to be able to, you know, obviously get through the season. But, okay, I got one here. Vince Carter just announced that he will be retiring from the game of basketball, right? So 22 years Vince Carter in the NBA. So – I know for the both of you, it might be a little bit different because just same thing as, let's say, me and Michael Thompson. Like, Michael's going to have seen so many different players perform back in the day that I just never got to watch. But the one thing I always – the first thing I think of when I think of Vince Carter is this is the greatest dunker I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he's literally the best – he's a human highlight, which is not his nickname. That used to go to Dominique Wilkins, the human highlight film – the human highlight film. I think that was his nickname. But when I think of Vince Carter, one of the only things I think about is his dunk in the Olympics where he literally jumped over somebody that was 7'2", right? A French center. He jumps over at 7'2". And then you kind of start thinking, all right, well, who are the best dunkers in the game? And there's definitely a long laundry list of amazing dunkers in the game. But for the two of you who are – you know, 10 years younger than I am, who in your, you know, when you think of the greatest to ever do it, just they do it so flawlessly. By the way, there's players in the league right now. Go watch the slam dunk contest these last couple of years. Aaron Gordon is ridiculous, some of the dunks that he has, and there's always highlights that are out there. But Curtis, when I tell you best dunker or one of the best dunkers that you've ever seen, what comes to mind?
I mean, VC is still number one for me. I mean, the guy's been around so long, but for some other
choices, by the way, just on Vince Carter, effortless. Oh, you know, yeah. That's the thing that like that just kills me when I say it. Just watching him, I'm like, he doesn't even look like he's trying. You know, that All-Star game where he just completely wiped everybody. I mean, it was just one of the best slam dunk contests we've ever seen. That's all great and dandy, but a lot of his dunks during games were unbelievable. So I got Vince Carter. Keep going.
So I got a choice and an honorable mention. So
okay.
What about MJ? Just because his dunk is a logo. That's how iconic it was. You know what I mean? That literally is a brand in itself, just that action of that
just
one
shows
man doing it.
Let me give you one of my favorite things about watching Jordan when you go back and watch highlights. That's another thing, right? Where you just say effortless. But one of the things with Jordan is go back and watch highlights when he was, you know, a couple years into the league. There are times where he would dunk on an opposing team, and I'm not kidding. Look at the bench of the opposing team, and they're all like, they got their hands on their head, they're moving around on the bench. Like, that is against your team. Players didn't even care. They were just mesmerized by Michael Jordan. So, of course, Michael Jordan, one of the greatest to, you know, obviously ever do it from that perspective. But you said you have another one, honorable mention?
This is looking towards the future If he can stay healthy, Zion Williamson made his career on Instagram, on House of Highlights, with his dunks in elementary school, eighth grade.
And he looks like a linebacker.
Yeah, and if he could just keep healthy and, you know, everything's settled, he has that talent to where, like, I don't know how many dunk contests he'll actually do because it seems like the stars don't usually do them. But Zion has the possibility if he stays healthy.
I love the in-game stuff.
It's
I love the in-game. Zion, how about that highlight when he's at Duke? He does that 360 or whatever, 360 windmill. I'm like, what the hell was that? How do you do that during the game?
We knew who Zion was because of his dunking, though, before he even went to college. That's how crazy it was.
All right, Jess, you got – by the way, let me just throw in there. Dominique Wilkins, stupid, ridiculous. Here's one that maybe doesn't get as much love anymore, but Blake Griffin – you know, early in his career.
What I was going to say.
But you know what I'm saying, Jess? Like, he just, he had this, like, ferocity to his dunk, which actually reminds me more of, like, Sean Kemp back in the days. But go on. You can go on, Blake.
Well, I was going to say Vince Carter for sure, definitely is number one. But I was going to say Blake, not only because of how uber athletic he was, but because he had Chris Paul setting him up. Like, how many of those dunks look just as beautiful as they did because he had a point guard like Chris Paul and set him up? And
you can't find a better setup, man. That's like as good of a setup, man, as you can possibly get.
Definitely. And you want to talk about dunks, too? Go take a look back at DeAndre Jordan when he was with those earlier with the Clippers. Talk about a finesse power dunker. That's where the
mold here's the difference. Here's the difference. That's why when we say Vince Carter, Michael Jordan – Dominique Wilkins, their size, and don't get me wrong, like DeAndre is stupid. You shouldn't be that athletic as, you know, Dwight. By the way, Dwight, back in the Orlando days, this dude was catching lobs and going up like crazy. But that is the one thing. Just because Vince Carter, and I should give him, I wish I didn't think of him as, you know, the first thing I think of is, oh, well, it's because I think of Vince Carter simply because he dunks, because he's a lot more than just, you know, somebody that dunked the ball in the league. But I'm always going to remember Vince Carter for that because he was unbelievable at it. You know what I mean? Unbelievable at it.
And you know what? Sometimes it might suck that you'll only be remembered for one thing. But you know what? If I'm Vince Carter, I mean, I'm remembered for dunks, not to mention – right now,
arguably the greatest to ever do it.
Yeah, and he retired right now in a time where, you know, dunks isn't really as like a big, humongous part of the game. At least it was.
It's all about the threes. Sure,
it's all about the threes and the jump shot and the crossover and, you know, making people fall and break their ankles. So it shows that even as the game was progressing and changing, he stayed good enough to make sure that he was able to compete. He was able to contribute. He may have never have been, you know, the best player on his team. He may have never had, you know.
No, Carter was. I mean, Carter had. I mean, there were definitely times. Vince Carter's a great player. I mean, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
But, I think so, too.
But, like, you know, his ability, like I mentioned, his ability, some of the greatest highlights you'll see in the history of the NBA are some of Vince Carter's dunks. And I'm just talking about individual performance. You know, like I mentioned, the dunk over in the Olympics over a 7-2 center. So some love to Vince Carter. Unbelievable career. He goes 22 years. I know we got to go to break here. So let me do this. Question came up on First Take, or I'm sorry, on Get Up a little bit earlier today. All right. How much is at stake for LeBron James when the NBA resumes? How much is at stake for LeBron when the NBA resumes? Of course, Lakers trying to get their 17th NBA championship, but for LeBron, he's trying to get chip number four. Arguably, you know, this could be his best chance to do it. Let's talk about that when we come back. Stay right here. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
What is this?
I thought it was time for a change.
All right, so
I like the song. Saint
appreciate
Motel.
You guys tuning in. We're going till 9 o'clock. I want to play this. I got this. I got this subject that came on GetUp, and it, listen, a lot of times, you know, these conversations, these questions that are there from GetUp, specifically today, I thought it was interesting. So they're talking about LeBron, and they're talking about how much is at stake for LeBron James when NBA resumes, right? So here you are, you got LeBron James, already such an accomplished player, and you know, obviously trying to add to that, but now in a Los Angeles Laker jersey, rocking the purple and gold. Can you get an NBA championship under these? Of course, the circumstances are going to be incredibly odd for everybody. We have talked about it, and I've spent a lot of time. Baxter Holmes was on just you know, about an hour ago or so, and we were talking specifically on, you know, the bubble and what it's going to look like. How's this thing going to happen? But let's just move past all that, and let's just focus on LeBron. I want to play something from Jalen Rose. And Jalen Rose on GetUp earlier today was talking about how much is at stake for LeBron when NBA resumes. So here's Jalen's take on that front.
During this era, the Golden State Warriors have also won 3 championships. Kevin Durant, finals MVP twice. And you're right, LeBron does have a chance to win finals MVP on his 3rd team. So does Kawhi Leonard. So yes, at stake for 35 years old, 17th year without Avery Bradley, I agree with you. The time in the hourglass is ticking. But LeBron James's greatness is cemented. I don't think winning 1 or 2 championships, for that matter, would put those like myself who understand the greatness of Michael Jordan and put LeBron in the conversation of passing him just because he won 1, if not 2, with the Los Angeles Lakers.
All right, so let me say this. I don't disagree with the part where LeBron James – I don't need to say his greatness is cemented, no question about it. As in, no matter if he accomplishes nothing else from this day forward, he doesn't need to accomplish anything else to say, okay, LeBron's one of the greatest to ever do it. He's cemented as top 3, top 2, top 4, top 5, wherever you want to put him. If you're talking top 10, period, in the NBA, you're obviously on this very short list, but LeBron's going to be, I think, top 5 in everybody's list no matter what. So I get what Jalen is saying about, you know, his greatness is cemented. That part I understand. That portion I understand. But let's pause for a second. If he wins a championship with the Los Angeles Lakers, you don't think that takes him to another level? And stop comparing him to Jordan. I hate when we compare him to Jordan. There's no point to compare him to Jordan. These are two players that played the game completely different from each other. So stop with the LeBron and the Michael Jordan. But winning a championship for the Los Angeles Lakers, one of the most popular franchises in the world, you know, I've always tried to make mention of this. Think about this. Manchester United, Real Madrid, the New York Yankees, the Dallas Cowboys, the Los Angeles Lakers. There is this conversation with certain franchises where it's not just local. It's not just, you know, within the state. It's not just in the country. This is a worldwide brand. What LeBron has accomplished, I thought his greatest championship was obviously with the Cleveland Cavaliers after they were down 3-1. They come back, him, Kyrie, Kevin Love, they win a championship against a team that had won, you know, 70-plus games that season. That's his greatest feat and accomplishment. And I don't think that's probably going to, you know, that can't be toppled, especially because he did it for Cleveland and everything else. But put that to the side for just a quick second. It's a big accomplishment if LeBron gets – not just the championship for the Los Angeles Lakers, but help the Lakers get number 17. Help the Los Angeles Lakers tie the Boston Celtics for most championships, you know, in the NBA's history. That's a big time championship. So yes, is he cemented where he is in the sense that he will always be considered a great if he didn't play one more game the rest of his career, and you just take what he accomplished up until this point and his career is over? No question about it. He's going to be considered one of those greats with everything that he's accomplished and he's done. But you get a chip, and even Jalen was throwing in there potentially 2 championships. So like, no, that's next level. Of course that's next level. Of course, too, at this stage of his career, being able to do it, still being the best player in the NBA, helping a player like Anthony Davis get over to the top, taking a franchise like the Lakers that haven't been to the playoffs in 6 years and we're on their way this year, of course, not just to make the postseason, but make some legitimate noise. Of course, that takes him to another level. I don't care the comparisons with Michael Jordan, but definitely, definitely, and it's not just the three championships with three different teams and three finals MVPs. You never know. Maybe Lakers get to the finals this year, they win a championship, and Anthony Davis is the best player on the court. I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, either way, I don't think it matters as long as Lakers win. But that to me, when I look at what LeBron James has done, this is another level for LeBron if he can win another chip for the Lakers. And I laid out all the reasons why. And I, you know, obviously want to see him accomplish that. I think it's an incredibly difficult feat. If you would have told me when he first signed with the Lakers, you know, year and a half ago now, almost 2 years ago, if you would have told me that the Lakers, you know, were going to win a chip, I would be scratching my head saying, well, how are they going to do it? You know, they don't have another star. You need another star. I would have listed all these questions on there, but Rome wasn't built overnight. And obviously the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron has slowly got themselves to that place. All right, Jackie McMullen, who's another ESPN senior writer. She's fantastic. She's obviously been covering basketball for a long time. She talks about LeBron's legacy. This was earlier on GetUp.
I'm telling you, you can never win. Ask Kobe Bryant, ask a host of others. You can never win chasing Michael Jordan. It just isn't going to work. Six championships, six MVPs after leaving for baseball and coming back and all that. So let's just talk about the basketball for a minute, Jay. If LeBron wins again, as Jalen points out, people count rings and LeBron would have to win three more. And if in this climate, I agree, what LeBron has done is amazing. Here's my point. I don't think this has anything to do with LeBron's legacy, any of it, because I agree that LeBron's legacy is already cemented. But for different reasons than either one of you have discussed, LeBron is the king of player empowerment. And to me, it's the most significant thing that's happened in his career. And it's seismic what it has done, how it has changed the NBA. LeBron James literally seized control of his career, of his life, and did this for all the other NBA athletes. And no longer could coaches or GMs or owners dictate how players control their NBA careers. LeBron James' player empowerment to me is his biggest legacy, and that is already in place. And NBA players should thank him every single day for making that possible for all of them as well.
That's a great point by Jackie McMullen. We don't talk about it enough. Of, you know what's crazy? You think about it, clutch sports, right? And there's actually an article right now. Let's see if I can find it. I was just looking at the title of it here. LeBron James gets $100 million investment to build a media empire. The King and his longtime business partner, Maverick Carter, have formed a new company with an unapologetic agenda. LeBron's doing everything. LeBron is literally doing everything. So it's not what he's just accomplishing on the court. It's everything that he's doing off the court. But I love what Jackie McMullen's saying there, player empowerment. So other players realize, okay, you know what? No. We definitely have a lot of power here. We can use our platforms. We could use this to, you know, take everything else off. And that's why there's a documentary that's supposed to be coming out on Magic. And we talked about this, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks ago or so. And me, Curtis, and Jesse were just kind of, or what part of Magic Johnson in this documentary are you most interested in seeing? And I said that I'm good with what he accomplished on the court because I already got a chance to see so much of it. And I already saw the highlights and everything else. Talk to me about what he did off the court, his business, right? Everything that he was able to accomplish from a business perspective. LeBron's doing this all while he's still in the game. And it's not that he's still in the game and he's not paying attention to the game. Lakers were the number one team in the Western Conference. He was, in my opinion, the most valuable player in the league. And even though Giannis technically had probably would have won most valuable player just based off of what experts were, I guess the voting panel would have voted on. But for me, I thought it was LeBron James, and I wasn't being biased. I thought it was LeBron James because I got a chance to see what the Lakers were when LeBron was off the court. But it is incredibly, incredibly, when Jackie McMullen says player empowerment, that's That's a great way to put it, and those are big words, because this isn't just for LeBron. The hope is that players kind of continue to go off of this when he's long gone and he's doing everything else that he's doing. All right, Hybrid Sports Talk says, at Alan Sliwa, can I get some Sean Kemp love in this debate about best in-game dunkers? The Gary Payton Rain Man combo made for the best highlights. I can't argue that one. Definitely can't argue that one. Some of the best dunks came from Sean Kemp. Some of the best lobs were coming from Gary Payton. All right, so I want to read off I want to make mention of real quick. So Stephen A. Smith on First Take. Who has the most to lose if the bubble goes south for the NBA? The players or the owners? Who has the most to lose? I think this is an easy one for me. But before we go to break, just a quick reminder. 710 ESPN wants to salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. If you know someone who is working as a healthcare provider, firefighter, EMS worker, or a food service professional, nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email the station, ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com, with your first and last name, city, and your occupation, or post a short video on Instagram or Twitter and include the hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift to include a $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop, VSLiquor.com, and Shooteria.com. Thank you to all our partners. Who has the most to lose if this bubble goes south for the NBA, the players or the owners? We'll talk about that coming up next. This is the Sliwa Show on 710 ESPN. All right, so Stephen A. Smith on First Take. Who has the most to lose if this bubble goes south for the NBA, the players or the owners? Let me play this real quick. This is Stephen A. Smith from this morning.
I think it's the players. And the reason why I think it's the players is because of the force majeure provision, the doomsday provision in the NBA's collective bargaining agreement. If the games don't resume and the season is officially canceled, then the owners have the right to rip up the collective bargaining agreement and start anew. And if they start anew, I've personally been told by several executives in the National Basketball Association, including at least two owners, that we most certainly will pursue a hard salary cap. And so when you take that into consideration, and when I say a hard salary cap, a la the NFL. Now, the players can sit up there and tell you no way in hell will we ever capitulate to that and what have you. But I would remind you that once upon a time, they were getting about 50% of basketball related income. It's now down to 50%. They'll go for less than that in the future. And so you're talking about the owners going for the jugular simply because it's not about being enemies with the players or anything like that. It's about the fact that there's an abundance of losses that they've accrued already, and they're projecting to lose even more because of advertisers and sponsors, them having lost money, the kind of dollars they're going to be able to throw into the coffers of the NBA. If we are indeed partners, then we are all suffering, which means we all need to suffer together. This is why you have to have a season. Chris Paul is a businessman. I think he's doing a great job as president of basketball operations. He knows what the hell he's doing. He certainly puts in the work and works diligently to understand what's going on. LeBron James, he's renowned as an astute business mind, not just a phenomenal basketball player. Andre Iguodala, I can't say enough about the things that I've heard about him and the kind of effort that he's put forth in making sure that the players are on the up and up in terms of their knowledge about what's transpiring, what's going on. We saw Jared Dudley issue a tweet weeks ago alluding to these very kind of things that I'm talking about. The owners are going to get some of this back. They are not going to sit up there and accrue all the losses by themselves. The players will suffer significantly.
All right, so that's Stephen A. Smith right there. I mean, listen, if the question is who's more at risk here, who's more to lose if this bubble goes south, of course it's the players. By the way, the whole risk is the players. And don't get me wrong. I know the owners are fronting the money. I know the owners are going to be depending and predicated on these games to be played and pocketing millions of dollars. It's billionaires versus millionaires. But why don't we put all that to the side for a quick second? You think owners are going to be going to this Orlando bubble? You think they're going to be sitting there for 3 months? You think they're going to be a part of the risk that a lot of these players are going to endure? 100% they're not. 100% they're not. The risk is all the players. That's the bottom line. I mean, they're really, this is a very easy conversation. When you look at the risk coming up, the risk is going to be there from a financial perspective, And what I'm talking about there is if, you know, it obviously doesn't play out. The risk is also going to be there from a just a player safety perspective. Nobody knows what's going to happen. By the way, us just while that clip was playing, I'm sitting here on Twitter. And Curtis, did you see this? You hear what Kevin Durant said recently on an interview with Doc Talk?
No, I think we were preparing for that one at some point, but I didn't actually listen to it.
Okay, so look at this. This is exactly he's talking about, you know, the situation and the NBA trying to finish out the season in Orlando. So I'll read this off. This is Kevin Durant, obviously all-star for the Brooklyn Nets. I feel me right now. I probably wouldn't have played because of the unknown going into that situation. Looks crazy right now seeing so many new cases. It's just so unpredictable. It's easy for me to say right now because I'm injured, but I probably wouldn't have went down there, obviously referring to Orlando. Listen, the risk is the players. How about the other part of the risk that the players have? You have a couple players that decided they're on contract years. David Bertrand's, Jess, we were talking about him a couple days ago. I remember when he was one of the first ones to say, okay, well, he's had two ACL tears. He's in a contract year. He actually got some heat from some other players. Evan Fournier gave him some heat about, you know, obviously deciding not to play in this Orlando bubble. But the risk is the players. All the risk is in the players. I mean, if you think about from an injury perspective, from a COVID-19 perspective, from the games getting canceled and you don't get, you know, obviously your financial compensation perspective, this is not even – this is a very quick conversation. You want to talk about risk, it's all in the players.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's – I really don't know what else to say there. You kind of – you said everything I was going to say. The players
right,
are going
injury,
in.
Think about injury, COVID-19, financial. Like, they're the ones taking all the risk.
Yeah, there might be other different risk associated that the owners are facing, but for the most part, the players are facing the most risk, the absolute most risk in going and, you know, because they're putting their trust on everyone else. While the owners are just kind of putting the trust in Adam Silver and saying, do the best you can. But the
think about this. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. Just finish your point.
The players are trusting not only on Adam Silver to making sure that all this is set right, but they have to make sure that they're trusting their teammates, their colleagues, everyone else in the bubble to make sure that they stay responsible and they don't go do anything dumb. So
and then random, you know, I think there's what over 1,500 people will be in this bubble, and you got to also take into consideration Disney employees that are not going to be tested every day. At least that's the idea right now. It's the players that are tested every day, but these workers coming in and out. But you just kind of stack all that together. I get what KD is saying. KD is saying, I don't think I'd have to. Now, KD is obviously in a different financial position than, you know, most of these players, and he's got max contract after max contract, and well-deserved. He's one of the best players in the league. But ultimately, when you do look at that, like, we also don't even know how long has this virus been around? You'd say, like, since December, right? So let's say the virus has been around for 6-7 months. We also don't know that much about the virus. Like, we don't know if somebody that gets COVID-19, if they're going to have – you just don't know, right? There's just not enough information there. So when we talk about risk, risk is all – with the players. No question about it. It's with the players, and that's obviously going to be the case. And hopefully, you know, when this season's all said and done, the NBA doesn't have to deal with a predicament or situation where the owners, you know, rip up the collective bargaining agreement and have to kind of start all over. Hopefully that isn't the case. All right, just a quick reminder. So for tomorrow, Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ start at 6 a.m. They go till 10. Sedano after that, 10 to noon. Will Cain show, then the Mason and Ireland show, and tomorrow is going to be Clinton Yates and John Ireland. And then for us, we'll get started at 6:30, 6 o'clock on 12 Stock. L.A., have a great rest of your night.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your teenager to help around the house?
Okay, Mom, I emptied the dishwasher, vacuumed the basement, and folded the sheets out of the dryer.
Wait, what?
Oh, and next, I'm going to clean Mitten's litter box.
Are we in some kind of prank show or something? That's a camera, isn't it?
There's never been a better time to switch to GEICO. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit GEICO.com for details.